evening, everyone out there listening to my show, which is now called The Universe of the Soul's Evolution. And the reason I changed it from The Church of the Soul's Evolution to The Universe of the Soul's Evolution was because I'd heard from a few people, and specifically, most recently, from a man I met on the cruise that we took back on the beginning of December. It was after the military appreciation gathering, which I always go to on a cruise and introduce myself when I get that opportunity. You know, they give me the microphone and I introduce myself. And it goes something like this. Hello, my name is Blake Ruby. And I served 22 years on active duty in the Army, 4 years in the infantry, and 18 years as an administrative specialist. I retired in 2004, and I have continued working for the Army since then up until now. 6 years as a contractor, and coming up to 15 years as a civilian. I am an operations specialist for the Headquarters Installation Management Command, stationed at Fort Sam Houston, Texas. I work in the G3, which is operations of the G357 Directorate. And I am a GS-13. I have a wife, Jackie, who is usually with me at these military appreciation gatherings. And also a son, Bryce, who lives in Burbank, California. I have a sister, Eleanor, who lives in Seattle. Hey, come on. We've got two of the dogs here in the room. Hey, where are you going? Back. Hold on, everybody. Just a minute, please. Come on. Don't disturb me. I've got my show going here. It's the young dog. His name is Lenny. And Goldie, the other dog, is lying on the bed here in the bedroom. Hey, come on. Hey, come on. Hey, come on. Come on. Trying to get by me to go in the bathroom. I'm sorry. So back to what I was saying, I might also, in these military appreciation gatherings, I've only got like about a minute. People usually have a minute or so to say something about themselves or what they did when they were in the military. It's all the different services, Army, Marines, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, the Space Force, and they have the songs, you know, for each service. We sing and we clap, and I sing for all the other branches of the service too. And I might also mention about my parents. My parents were English. My father was with the British Army in World War II. He was at Normandy and Dunkirk, and my mother went through the bombing of London. They were war babies, and they were bitter. They had PTSD. You know, how would you feel if you're being shot at? You know, back then, the Germans were trying to conquer the world. Did you know that the Germans were very close to developing the atomic bomb before we were? It's true. And can you imagine how different the world would have been? How different it would be right now if the Germans had dropped the bomb on a few places. You know, England, they would have surrendered. More than likely, like Japan surrendered. Not a pleasant topic to discuss, but reality, my friend. Not fantasy, reality. And it just so happens, that back then, and for many, many years in our history, throughout the centuries, there has been extraterrestrial intervention in our past, all the way back to Moses' time, parting the Red Sea. It was a spacecraft that did that, my friend. Don't think in terms of fantasy. Think in terms of science and technology. It wasn't some waving of the magic wand kind of thing that people don't really understand or think much of. No. In the material world, material laws apply. and parting the Red Sea was very simply done with some amazing technology from a civilization that has been traveling the universe for millions of years, even before we were created, our planet was created, our solar system was created, our galaxy even. And don't you know, there's a lot of galaxies out there, a lot of galaxies, my friends, and they're all huge. Our Milky Way galaxy is 100,000 light years across, and there are millions of stars. I don't want to boggle your mind with a number, but suffice it to say, there are hundreds and thousands of suns out there, and each sun has its own separate solar system, is its own separate solar system. If you get a telescope and look at the evening sky and focus on, and I'm talking about a good telescope, 200 power or something, and you focus on one of those stars or suns out there, you'll notice that every single one in the evening sky has planets that revolve around it. And that is the law of the universe, that each sun out there has nine planets. The number nine is the number of the universe. So some might have a little bit more or less, but ultimately they revert back to the number nine planets, just like we do in our solar system, right? So I was getting back to why I changed the name of the show. I talked with somebody after the military appreciation gathering. After we had our picture taken, we all get up on the stage. So I was talking with this one man, nice gentleman. And that's one really cool thing about cruises, you get to meet new people. That's probably the most enjoyable thing, I think, and have conversations with them like I did. Not the food, not the entertainment, not the sunlight on the water sparkling, or the moon at night shining on the water, or the ports of call, or the karaoke, or the dancing. It's meeting the people. And so I had a conversation with this guy, and I told him about my radio show on BBS Radio and TV. And I said, it's called The Church of the Soul's Evolution. And the first thing he said was, well, I'm not a religious person myself. I'm more spiritual. And I kind of like was going to myself, thinking to myself, well, heck, that's all I talk about, spirituality. The reason I called it The Church of the Soul's Evolution was because you have all these different churches on Earth, and they all claim to profess the truth, yet they're different, and there can only be one truth, right? So, in my opinion, there's nothing more important as spirits here in the material world than to evolve our soul. And churches don't really focus on that. They're not really interested in the soul and the spirit. They're more interested in the history of what happened back then. They want to go over, I'm not trying to say anything negative about the Bible, but that's what they focus on, different parts of the Bible. And whenever they give their sermons, whether it's chaplains like what I go to, my wife and I, we go to the Freedom Chapel on Lackland Air Force Base. The chaplains will pick a segment of the Bible and talk about it. Recently, of course, you know, we had the birth of Jesus that we talked about because it was Christmas. And everything that goes along with that, the shepherds who were visited by angels, apparently, and were guided towards where the Star of Bethlehem shone down on the manger of Jesus, and that those meager kind of circumstances, if you will. Did you know that the angels that appear, and don't get me wrong, there are angels, they do exist. When we go to heaven, we will see them. It'll be a remembering that they were very involved in our existence in the spirit world before we were born on this planet. And so there will be a remembering when we get back to the spirit world. There'll be angels everywhere, all types of angels, archangels, cherubim is around the throne room of the Mother and Father God. Teraphims, which shine so brightly they look like they're on fire. And so do our Mother and Father God on their thrones. Oh, yes, there in the holy city, my friends. You've got to read a book. Do me a favor, please. Read this book called Paradise, the Holy City, and the Glory of the Throne. Paradise, the Holy City, and the Glory of the Throne. If you're interested, and you should be if you're wanting to develop your soul, read that book. It is the best account of what heaven is like and where we're going. Ultimately, we'll all get there, except for those that commit those really bad sins like murder, you know, people that are evil, if you will. I don't like using that word, but rapists, people who are verbal, sexual, physical abusers, people that don't believe in the creator or creator of the universe. It's possible they might spend a little time in God's jail, otherwise known as hell, down there, down below the surface of the earth, down, way down to those regions of cavernous regions of where there's molten iron and lava and fire and darkness and just a terrible stench down there. And there are demons. Archangel Lucifer is in charge of the demons and God's jail, just like Archangel Michael is in charge of the angels. But getting back to the throne room, the Mother and Father God is surrounded by angels, flying around all the time, huge angels, archangels, some with like 20-foot wingspans flying over the throne. It's a very busy place there. Beautiful. They call the area in front of the throne room the Sea of Glass, and there's a lot of celebration going on all the time. Plus, it's a busy place, too, where they're running the whole world, the solar system. There on the sun, I'm going to take a drink. You look into the sun with the eyes of the spirit. You know you have a spirit in your body, right? And when we die, let me take another drink. Our spirits pop out of our bodies. Pop. Sometimes to the top of the head, sometimes through the chest. Read my book, The Gray Brain and the Golden Soul. The Gray Brain and the Golden Soul. As the brain is to the physical body, so the soul is to the spirit. It's in the Amazon Kindle bookstore, and I'll tell you everything I've been talking about. 80 pages, chock-a-block full of spirituality that I guarantee you will evolve your soul to a higher level. If you're ready for that, unless you think you're invincible and you're going to live forever, some people do. Hey, come on. Hey. Don't go walking by me. I'm doing my radio show. It's the dog. His name's Lenny. He got out today. He went out through the gate. I left the gate. All right, what did I just say? Come on. Don't try to get by me here. Go on. Hey. He's trying to get by me into the bathroom. Wait. Don't start barking either. Anyway, what did I just say? No. Come. Yeah. Come. All right. All right. All right. I spray him with water. Some people might think it's cruel, but it produces results. Otherwise, he just ignores me. And a little bit of water doesn't hurt anybody, but he's afraid of water. He doesn't like to be sprayed. You coming back for more? Hey, what did I just say? No? Come on. Hey. Thank you. And he's a rough dog, too. He's fast. He goes running around the backyard. And he'll bite you. I mean, he's not mean. He's just playful, but he bites. And he likes playing tug-of-war or something, you know. So he's very strong, actually, very fast. And he got out today. I thought I'd close the gate behind me, but, and I knew I should have gone back and checked. But he got outside, he ran around, and when my stepdaughter and grandchildren came back, he was outside. And so they were angry at me for leaving the gate open, but I thought I closed it. I went back. They had closed it themselves, but they thought that they had closed it properly. They hadn't closed it properly. It does require physically looking at the latch to make sure it's closed properly, but he wasn't hurt, fortunately. As he goes running out there, I've seen him before. It's happened before where he's got out the front door. He's got out the front door and ran around and ran in the road. Thank God the cars weren't coming at that time, because they do come sometimes down the road fast. And changing the subject, my friends, I really want to move out of this house. And I'm getting ready to retire. So, as I mentioned, you know, I've been working for the Army a long time. I'll have 43 years in May. And my retirement date is 31st of May. And actually, I take that back. It's the 2nd of August. That's when I'll have 15 years as a civilian, 6 years working as a contractor, and 22 years active duty, and that's 43 years total. And I'm trying to figure out what to do. I live here in this house. I'm going to take a drink. And I've been living here since 2010. I bought the house. That was part of the deal when I was a contractor. I became a Department of the Army civilian. The deal was I would move here to San Antonio to work in Fort Sam Houston. And I bought a house. And then my girlfriend, if you will, Jackie, we'd known each other for a few years. I first met her back around 2005 working in headquarters Installation Management Command in Crystal City, Virginia. She was in the logistics directorate. I was in the operations director. We sat next to each other. We had cubicles next to each other. And the first time, besides talking there in the workplace, that we went out together was we met each other at an Army birthday ball, and we danced the night away, and I didn't see her. She got a promotion, went to Army Materiel Command in Fort Belvoir. I didn't see her till the following year at the next Army birthday ball. Again, we danced the night away, and it was after that that we started dating. I say that in quotation marks, kind of dating, because we weren't really dating, but we did start going out. We did start going out and going to movies and going for walks and to restaurants. And so when I moved here, at that time, Army Materiel Command was getting ready to, like our command, they were BRACT, which means it was the Base Realignment Commission, to move some bases to different places, close other bases down. And Army Materiel Command was being moved to Huntsville, Alabama, from Fort Belvoir. So Jackie didn't want to move to Huntsville. And they were getting ready to place her on something called Priority Placement Program, PPP. And I thought she was going to move here to San Antonio, and we were going to continue our relationship. But she said that she was going to be looking for a job in the National Capital Region, which is the Military District of Washington, Joint Base Meyer-Henderson Hall, Fort Meade, and Fort Belvoir. And when I heard that, I thought, oh my God, I'm losing her. I've got to do something. So I popped a question. I said, you want to get married? And she said, yes! And so that was January 2011. And she came down here in February, just before Valentine's Day, the 11th of February, and we went to downtown San Antonio, and we got married with the Justice of the Peace there. And we got our marriage license. It cost $66, I still remember. And then she went back to Alexandria, Virginia, where she was living, and finished up, retired, moved here in May of 2011, and then in November of 2011, her daughter and grandchildren moved in with us. And it wasn't a pleasant situation at first. I mean, they weren't doing what I was asking to do. They weren't taking their shoes off. The baby was crying and screaming. They weren't doing any chores. They weren't giving us any money for the rent. So the last straw, the final straw, was when Eva, my stepdaughter, was in here with the baby in her bedroom. And the baby was crying and screaming. And Jackie was in here and they were talking. And I said, I didn't want to hear it. So I said, take the baby outside now. This is our bedroom, and I don't want to hear it anymore. She was ignoring me. So I finally yelled at her, and she came by and said, I'll knock your ass out. Well, that was a little bit too much. That went over the line, so I gave her a letter, which is what you have to do. When someone moves into your house here in Texas, I don't know if it's the same with any other state, you have to give them a letter and tell them, and she's about to get another one. So I'll tell you more about that later. So at the time, I gave her the letter and said, you know, I'm sorry, you haven't been paying rent, and you've been not doing any chores and disrespectful to me, and so you have 30 days to move out. And after 30 days, they didn't move out, so I went down to the Justice of the Peace and got what they call a forcible detainer. I paid for what they call a forcible detainer. We went to court, and we stood up there in front of the judge, and the judge heard our story and said, well, I'm going to rule in favor of Mr. Ruby because it's his house, and that was that. But that wasn't the entire process. Then they have something what they call a writ of possession, and that took some time, and we got in front of the judge. She didn't show up that time, and the whole process took almost a year. Finally, in 2013, the sheriffs came over here. They came inside the house, and they told Eva, you got to move your stuff outside. If you don't have it out there on the curb in an hour or something, I forget exactly, we will move it for you. So we put them in a cab, and they went down to the bus station, and they moved to Delaware. Dover, Delaware, to live with my wife's sister, Ruby, in their house there. And they stayed there about a year, and they got kicked out because of similar kind of circumstances. And they went to live with my wife's niece, Darian, who has since passed away. God bless her soul, please. Never met her, but I knew she was a good person. Six of them living in a one-bedroom apartment. And so they were kicked out of there, and they moved here, and they were going to go to the Haven for Hope. And that's a place in downtown San Antonio. They look after people who are poor and underprivileged, so to speak, people who need help, homeless, alcoholic, whatever. And we had arranged for them to get some on-the-job training. Eva, for her to get on the job training. And they were going to look after them, house them, you know. But they came here, and they were going to go, like, maybe the following day. And when they came into our house, I thought, wow, you know, it's kind of like old times. And even though we had our troubles, I kind of liked it. My wife seemed happy that they were here. And I said, you know what? Y'all can stay. And they've stayed over the years. But now things have gotten recently testy again. Eva, she likes to tell me what to do, and I don't want to hear it from her. You know, we've had plenty of good conversations, but lately I think she's been depressed. She doesn't have a job except for twice a year. Recently, twice a year, she's been going to the election polling stations, and she has a job as a clerk. and gets paid, I think, $16, $17 an hour. So she does that early voting for 2 weeks, twice a year. Otherwise, she hasn't had a job. And my granddaughter, India, was going to college, and she since dropped out and hasn't been doing anything. My grandson, Malik, he works in Amazon as a forklift operator overnight. So he's a good man, fine young man, really. And I have no problem with him. I just recently gifted him the car he's been driving around, a 17 Camry. And it was worth $27,000 brand new. I bought it for my wife, but after a while, she didn't want it. She gave it to him, and he started driving it. And also, Eva drives it sometimes. It's now worth about $14,000. Well, I wanted to gift it to him, so we went down to the tax assessor's office recently, and I gave it to him, signed over the title. And then there's the 15-year-old granddaughter, Malia, who is a real firecracker. She walks around here and always has been screaming and yelling and slamming doors and losing her temper and swearing. And Eva, my stepdaughter, she's been vaping recently. And I've been getting into conflicts with her, you know. She can tell me what to do, but apparently I can't tell her what to do. And so we had a confrontation the other day. And hold on just a second. I'm going to close the door. Probably should have done that before. I would have kept Lenny out. But I think I'm not sure who it is, it might be one of my granddaughters was out there in the hallway and she might have been listening to what I was saying. But the plan is, as I mentioned, I'm going to retire on the 31st of May. And I have about 3 months of sick leave, so that's going to be added on to the end. That will give me 15 years plus of service as a civilian. And then I have a little extra leave, but it doesn't quite equal a total month of overall service, I mean, of sick leave. And so I'll be effectively out of the net around the beginning of May. And the plan is that we want to get them on their own. We want them to be self-sufficient because I've been paying for everything. The mortgage, and I've mentioned this before on another radio show in the past, I forget when it was. And the mortgage, the utilities, some of the food. Eva was getting food stamps for a while, but when Mr. Trump became president in 2016-17, then the benefits for some of the, for some people like those who are poor, you know, don't make so much money a year, they were entitled to food stamps, and she was getting food stamps and other benefits, Medicaid, etc. And not anymore. So I feel sorry for them. I mean, but when I, like recently, let me tell you about what happened. I'm going to take a drink. So we have some really bad luck with nails here in San Antonio with all our cars. I had three cars. I own three cars. I just gave one to Malik, like I said. But my wife's car, she's always getting nails in the tires. I can't figure it out. But recently, like a couple of weeks ago, she got a nail in the right rear tire. And she had to go somewhere. She took my car. And I said I would call GEICO because they have roadside assistance. And so I talked with someone, and they said that they would send somebody out here. It'd be about an hour before they got here. So Jackie had taken her keys, and Eva had another set of keys. And so she was washing the window, the front window, getting the house clean because my other stepdaughter, Kathy, is here. She was coming from Tokyo, Japan, where she lives with her son, Jacob, my grandson, Jacob. So she was cleaning the window, talking with my granddaughter, India. And I said, can I have the keys to move the car? And she ignored me, which is typical. And so I said, can I have the keys, please? She said, you don't need to move it now. They're not here. And I said, I want to get the car ready so when they get here, that it's ready for them and they don't have to wait for me. Makes sense, right? So she ignored me. I said, give me the keys, please. So she rushed me, reaching into her chest where she had the keys. And I don't know why she kept them there in her, tied to her bra, apparently, pushing me back, trying to get the key out, get the key undone. I didn't like that. So I said, back off. Keep your distance, please. Back off. Back off. I said it three times. Finally, she said, what are you going to do about it? And so that really upset me. I was angered. So I went to my computer. I had a letter, the letter that she's going to get. I wanted to give it to her then. I sent it to my wife. She said, cool down. Take a deep breath. Think this through. Move forward in silence. Don't ruin the Christmas holidays, you know. So the plan is, once my stepdaughter Kathy has left and gone back to Tokyo, they're going to get a letter. Unless Malik, and we've talked about this before, assumes the mortgage on the house. If he doesn't, then they're going to get a certain amount of time, like up until the 31st of March, to get out of the house, and we're going to help them get on their feet, pay for a rental home here in the community, maybe $1,600 a month, 3-4 bedrooms, and they can take the furniture from here, move, and then we're going to move. But before we do, they will pay for that rent for a year. That's the plan. Give them some money for utilities. I still got to work out all the details. It's not going to be easy, but I've had too many confrontations, like, I'm going to take a drink. Like what I just mentioned, there was one time a few years ago where she said, we got into an argument, and she was saying, like, F you, Blake, F you, and went on about like 10 times. I was telling her, you need to get a job, you know. You need to pay your way. Anyway, take a drink. So that's what's been going on in my life, my friends. I feel free to talk about anything I want, you know. That's one good thing about my radio show, is that I don't have a lot of structure, if you will. I prefer to make it impromptu, extemporaneous, you know. I have in my head all throughout the week, I think about what I'm going to talk about on my radio show. And it's a huge universe out there, my friends. It's a great and wonderful situation that we're a part of. But the Blake Ruby, who is the Reverend Blake Ruby, also has this life, you know, that I live 24 hours a day, just like you do. And so I just wanted to share with you some circumstances that are going on, the situation that is happening, and the next few months are going to be interesting, to say the least. You know, I'll be winding down at work. And I'll be busy doing what I need to do. And I hope they don't take it personally, you know. We've been thinking about moving to New Mexico or Arizona, but thinking about moving to the beach, you know. One main consideration for me, because I'll be living on my pensions, is living in a state where there is no income tax. Texas doesn't have income tax. New Mexico, Arizona, they do. Nevada doesn't. I've been thinking about moving to Nevada. There's different cities there where one can retire in, popular places to retire, like Las Vegas or Henderson or Boulder City or Mesquite. And one consideration is moving closer to my son, Bryce, who lives in Burbank, California. Bryce, if you're out there listening, give me a call, BBS Radio. Just look up the number. They've got a toll-free number. Call, and we can talk about it. And Bryce is presently living in Burbank with the woman, a woman who was the aunt in Home Alone 1 and Home Alone 2. Great movies. Her name is Terry Snell, and she's his manager. She rents his bedroom in the apartment that she rents from the owner. And she's like a second mom to him. Presently, he's writing this book, this biography, autobiography of his life, what he's been through. He's been through a lot. It's called Finding Faith in Dialysis. And I'm presently going through the book, editing it for him. It's an amazing book. So please, when that book comes out, sometime in the near future. It's an amazing read. I mean, I'm learning some things that I didn't even know that what he was going through. We used to get together once a month. I'm going to take a drink. As you may already know, I donated one of my kidneys to my son Bryce in 1995 when I was on active duty. We had the transplant at Stanford University in San Francisco. He was born with underdeveloped kidneys. And at age 3 months, they did what they call a phallostomy, where they cut the skin in his back behind the kidneys to let the urine drain out in the diaper. So not surprisingly, after 3 months, one of the kidneys became infected because you could actually, when changing the diaper, you could pull the skin back and look inside, deep down inside the body. It was an amazing thing. And it worked for the most part of 3 months until they became infected. You know, one of them became infected. So he went to his doctors and they recommended that he'd be put on peritoneal dialysis, and they take the kidneys out at the same time, which they did. And that began that process of him being on dialysis, peritoneal dialysis. And if you know anything about that, it's not a very pleasant thing to have to go through, especially for a baby. In the meantime, they'd asked me if I would like to donate one of my kidneys. And I said, of course, being his father. And I went through the testing and compatibility, and the blood type was right because I'm O positive, and that's what pretty much a universal donor. And I think he was A plus or A negative, so that was okay. And then the tissue testing, it was compatible, which is not surprising because I was his father. So they had to observe him over the month and get him ready for the transplant. He had to be a minimum of 6 months old. He was 10 months old when he had the surgery. And a minimum of 18 pounds in weight. He just made that deadline because he was throwing up a lot. Because the kidneys weren't working. And dialysis was tough for a baby, you know. Are you familiar? If you're not familiar with peritoneal dialysis, let me tell you about it. He was later on in life, when he was about 19 years old, after he graduated from high school, he was losing kidney function, so he had to go back on peritoneal dialysis. You get a tube put in your abdominal area, and then that tube is hooked up to the peritoneal dialysis machine, usually at nighttime, and the machine pumps a solution into the abdominal area, which acts like the kidneys and purifies the blood and removes the impurities in the blood. In the solution, it's kind of like urine now when it comes out, you know, of the tube into a container. And the process lasts about 8 hours. There's different cycles, and you have to use a certain type of solution. They come in different grades of, I'm not sure exactly what, but they're like a 2 or a 2.5 or a 4.5. It's a different kind of solution that might be, maybe it draws more impurities out than depending on the level or grade of solution. It acts as a lesser grade, like a 2 or 2.5, doesn't draw as many impurities out of the blood like a higher grade does. So I think it all depends on the doctor and the circumstances and what they deem as better for the individual at the time. So imagine, if you will, it's not like hemodialysis where they take the blood out and purify it through a machine, which, in my opinion, would be preferable. I would prefer to do that, but with peritoneal dialysis, you feel that liquid coming in your abdominal area and it kind of blows you up, and it sits there for a length of time, like maybe 30 minutes to an hour, and then it exits the body, and that's when it has all the impurities. And apparently in the abdominal area it doesn't actually mix blood, you know, but it draws in the impurities from the blood like the kidneys do. So Bryce was on peritoneal dialysis from age 3 to 10 months, and he was throwing up all the time. He would go through that. He's a fighter, a real warrior, a trooper, you know, to endure that, very tough. An incredible young man, you know. Now he's 30 years old, and he got his second kidney back in 2014. But he had a tube also in his nose called an NG tube that was pumping high-calorie formula from a machine through the tube into his stomach, because he had to be fattened up because he was throwing up, and he had to reach that minimum weight for the transplant. So it just so happened that at age 10 months, he did reach that minimum weight of 18 pounds, and he was 10 months old, and we had the transplant, and they took one of my kidneys out, the right kidney, and they put it in him. If you didn't know, the kidney is about the size of your clenched fist. So if you clench your fist, look at him, that's about the size of the kidney is. And for him as a baby, and he was a big baby at that time, you know, 10 months, they put it in the abdominal area, fit in there nicely, you know, kind of in between the, above the hips and in the middle of the hip area there. And that kidney lasted him 19 years. And then I'm reading his book. It's an amazing read. It really is. I learned some things I didn't know what he went through when he graduated from high school. And his kidney function was reduced to 10% because he wasn't always taking care of himself. And, you know, a teenager that got those hormones raging and they want to do what they want to do and drink soda pop and eat candy and that kind of thing. And he wasn't drinking his water. Let that be a lesson to it. All of us, my friends, if you want to avoid kidney disease and diabetes and dialysis in the later stages of your life, drink your water. Drink the minimum daily recommended amount of water. I try to do it every day, and I usually do. So you can probably avoid other diseases too if you drink water. You have to. Water is a miracle liquid, my friends. I'm telling you, please. I'm telling you the truth. For yourself, for the world, to make the world a better place, drink your water, my friends. And he talks about it, Bryce talks about it in his book. He didn't drink his water, and so I don't know how long the kidney that I gave him could have lasted, possibly a few years longer. But in 2014, what he went through, he was on dialysis for a few months, and he was on the kidney transplant list. And if you don't know anything about that, it's usually about 5 years waiting time. And so they were asking for anyone to donate one of their kidneys. They had a page on Facebook, and the word was going around the town there where he was living, and thank God, his best friend's mom volunteered to donate one of her kidneys. Her name is Lisa. Lisa, if you're out there listening, may God bless you. Thank you for that gift of life. You're a wonderful person. May God bless you and your family and help you in any way you need it. We love you. Thank you. And what he had to go through for a few months up until the surgery, the counseling, the compatibility testing, the going to the all of the, you know, day and night living with having being hooked up to the dialysis machine, you know. As a baby, he couldn't remember much. He was just surviving, you know. But as a cognizant 19-year-old young man, to be aware of all of that, you know, and he couldn't sleep very well at night. Imagine how difficult it would be to sleep at nighttime with the fluid being pumped in your body over an eight-hour period, going through those different cycles where it would sit there and then drain out and then pump back in, sit there and drain out, like maybe eight cycles a night, you know, like one every hour. Do you think it'd be possible to sleep very well during that? Not. No, not at all. But he hung in there tough, and he would watch TV, he would watch videos, he would read, he would pray. He did a lot of praying. So it's an amazing book is coming out called Finding Faith in Dialysis by Bryce Ruby. I think it has the potential to be a bestseller, because I know there's a lot of people out there that are in the same situation he was or might be in the future. So it'll be very relevant for everyone. It's got some great chapters about, you know, everything from the first transplant to the second transplant, the counseling that he went through, going through high school, what he endured. He played basketball, but he couldn't play football because it's an impact sport, and that could have harmed his kidney. And Bryce, right now, he has 10 years with this new kidney. He's been looking after himself very well. He's an intelligent young man, and he's been doing the right thing. So I pray, please pray for him, Bryce, for that kidney that he's got right now to last him as long as possible. There is a chance that he'll need another kidney. Me, in the meantime, I've got my one lone kidney, and I've been doing okay. It's been since 1995, so soon it'll be 30 years. And living with one kidney, and I would recommend to anyone to donate one of the kidneys, because it is truly a gift of life. Now, for me to you, I'll be honest and truthful. I think that when you do give up one of your kidneys, or when you live with only one kidney, the kidney function is reduced. However, the one kidney increases its workload, if you will, to make up for the loss of the other kidney. So the function for that one kidney does increase, but the overall function of what would be or what should have been two kidneys is decreased. And what does that mean? It means that, well, what do the kidneys do? They purify the blood. So it's about digestion, too. The food that you eat, the liquids that you drink. And there's been no long-term research, but suffice it to say that from what I have experienced myself, the digestive processes are compromised. One can survive and live on one kidney sufficiently well, As I mentioned, there is no long-term research because kidney transplantation is a relatively new phenomenon, if you know what I mean. But I have gravitated from the beginning to a healthier lifestyle, and that's what most people from my research do. They ensure that they drink their water, they drink more water, drink less liquids with sugar in them, you know, soda pops. Even fruit juices have a lot of sugar in them, although pure fruit juices are good for the body, as long as you don't drink too much. The food you eat, I became a vegan 4 years after the transplant. I'm going to take a drink. And I've talked about this before on previous radio shows. I've been a vegan since the 29th of September, 1999, so over 25 years. And what I've learned is that when you eat a lot of vegetables, you get that fiber, one stays regular. I used to get constipated all the time. I'll be honest with you. I mean, we talk about reality. I do on my radio show. I have nothing to hide. And that's the way we're supposed to be, right? Hey, stop. The dog scratching the door wants to come in. I close the door. So it's like a brother or sister, you know, I'm telling you these things because we're all one, you know, we're a family, brothers and sisters in spirit, and even all around the universe, my friends. It's like my radio show now. It's called The Universe of the Soul's Evolution. There are other sentient beings out there that are going through their own soul's journey. From this life, you might go to another planet. You might have a different body. You might have a gray body, one of those gray extraterrestrial aliens, like in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. They look kind of like children, actually, with big heads and dark eyes. Or you might have any variation of a gray kind of tan-colored skin body, or maybe you might be a different kind of humanoid, like an Arcturian or a Palladian. Maybe with blue skin or different colored eyes or shape of eyes. A different level of evolution. Some planets have, maybe on the scale of 1 to 9, you could go to when you graduate from this existence with honor, shall we say, if you do everything you're supposed to do, if you're a kind, loving, friendly, generous person, and you're trying to make the world a better place, then you'll probably go to a planet of a higher evolutionary category. And that would be cool, because then you might find yourself in a civilization that has been traveling throughout the universe for millions of years with their technology. Everything is more advanced. And you could be all of a sudden piloting a flying saucer that has anti-gravity and electromagnetic propulsion systems that works interfacing with the sentient consciousness and the propulsion systems, if you know what I mean. Like the spacecraft that crashed at Roswell, for example, those extraterrestrials, from what I've learned from my research, were from the Large Magellanic Cloud Galaxy that were sent on a mission to test the soil and the air and the water around the Trinity site where they've been exploding atomic bombs to test the radiation levels. And the atmosphere was heavy. There was some electromagnetic disturbances during that time because there were some thunderstorms when they crashed and might have been hit by. And so they put their hands on I've got 1 minute, on the dashboard of the spacecraft, and just with their mind interfacing with the propulsion systems, they were able to turn left, go faster, slow down, turn right, that kind of thing. That's it, my friends. So I'll talk to you next Saturday. Thank you for listening. Might not have been what you expected, but I get to talk a little bit about myself. I love you, and may the creator of the universe bless us all and help us in any way we need it. Goodbye.